FYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
This is Insecticon Bob. He's doing very well indeed. That's because Insecticon Bob listens to TFYLP weekly. And Insecticon Bob loves Transformers, as does his missus. You can get TFYLP by downloading from iTunes today. Do not listen to TFYLP if instructed to do so by Chuck Norris. Do not place a listening device into the anus, as choking may occur. Please contact a physician if an erection for TFYLP lasts longer than 4 hours.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stars,
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for your listening pleasure. TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop?
Ratchet, will you take the chorus stop?
Transformers!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, episode number 175, recorded October 30th, 2015. Happy Halloween, everyone, if you're listening to this live or on Halloween. If you're listening to it after Halloween, it's kind of moot point. But we're doing a little bit something special tonight. The live interview that I had with Buzz Dixon here a while back, where it's just a one-on-one sit down, seemed to be kind of popular. And Rick brought it up to me here a week or two ago about doing a one-on-one sit down with him and talk about Play With This Too. And the Kickstarter that recently was unsuccessful, the second attempt, we're going to talk a little about that at length and talk about the company as a whole, where it is now, where it has been, and where it is going, if at all. We're going to talk about that. Some of these things may be a little bit cutting and a little bit a touchy subject for Rick, and we understand that. I do want to preface that I do consider Rick a very good friend. And I'm not trying to attack him in any way, even though some of these questions may seem, cutting and personal. But this is a way to get all the fans on board and understand where Play With This 2 stands and what happened and what's going on. And for those of the listeners who are wondering, well, this is a Transformer podcast. You know, why are we talking about not Transformers? Since some of the offerings from Play With This 2 homaged Transformers characters, it classifies as third party. So we also cover third party things. And, you know, Rick worked for Hasbro, so, you know, he has ties to the brand, whether or not you realize it or not. So we're going to talk about it at length, Play With This 2. And before we get started on the subjects, and I'm sure we'll get lost in some of them, I do want to mention our sponsors. CapturedPrey.com, great toys, great prices, great service, CapturedPrey.com, as well as Mega Toy Fan. Minimize your costs while maximizing your collection with Mega Toy Fan. You can catch Mega Toy Fan at the biggest conventions year-round, such as BotCon and TFCon. Check out Mega Toy Fan, and you can also contact him on Facebook at facebook.com/mega.toyfan. So check out both of our sponsors. Give them props. Those of you who don't know, I am Daron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf, and joining me tonight is Rick Alvarez. Welcome, Rick.
Hey,
on this Halloween Eve. Oh no, you froze up.
There you go.
You're freezing up.
You're freezing up.
Well, I'm freezing up. I've got 50 meg internet. What the hell? So play with this too. You know, I mean, you're not just a part of the cast. You also had this thing called Play With This 2 that you have been working so diligently on for the last, 2 years?
Two and a half years now, yeah.
2.5 years? Yeah. Let's kind of preface Play With This 2 and talk about your work at Hasbro. What did you do at Hasbro?
So I was the creative manager for the Transformers and G.I. Joe brands. I was part of a team called HasLab, and we were the guardians of the brand. So anything that had to do with design direction, IP, which is intellectual property, which is story, we oversaw. So video games, War for Cybertron, Fall of Cybertron, the movies, Transformers Prime, G.I. Joe Renegades, IDW, anything that was that had any story to it came through our hands. And then that also crossed over into stuff like having input into licensed goods and most importantly, the toys. And I was for a number of years working in that position.
You started out in the classics era, I guess?
Yeah, I came on right when middle of movie 2. So that was
been about 2009 or so. 2008. Well, see here, the first movie was 2007.
2009.
Yeah, so yeah. So basically what you did at Hasbro, you helped develop the brand intellectual property. This is a buzzword that seems to come up a lot in the Transformers fandom, especially when talking about third party type stuff. I mean, for example, I've got Fans Projects Dinoichi here, which is I guess the intellectual property as Kakariu of Dino King, the Dino Force.
A lot of people use that word incorrectly, intellectual property. So, That relates to what a company owns. And you can make an argument that if a company doesn't trademark certain images, if they don't trademark a name, you know, sometimes you see the prefix Autobot or Decepticon in front of a name. If they can't get a certain name, if they don't register individual images, say from comic form or a scene in a television series or individual episodes, it all becomes a very gray area at that point.
So
what it mostly applies to is the story and how those characters are portrayed in the story. Looks are superficial and they come secondary. For example, you can make a Batman figure that has four spikes on him, but if you make three, that's registered by DC. You can't do that. So it's all a very gray area, and
it's like Optimus Prime is red, blue, and he turns into a truck. That is general and intellectual property.
It's more like Optimus Prime is a figure of the good guys, and he stands around this tall. He typically turns into a truck.
Yeah. Well, the way I correct me if I'm wrong on this, but this is the way I, me as a person, view intellectual property and third and how third party gets away with what they do. This is a ballpoint pen. It is made by Bic. Now, who's to stop any other company from making a ballpoint pen as long as they don't call it Bic? And it basically does the same thing as the other brand's ballpoint pen.
But now you're talking more about design wise. If say they were to replicate the tooling that pen comes from, yeah, that is a clear theft of someone else's work that they paid to have done. But if they're not replicating the tooling, then they're just making a ballpoint pen.
Yeah. So, and much like the third parties, you know, they're not calling it the same thing. They don't even have the same story with it. It may resemble a character, but they're not making an existing tooling. It's an entirely new tooling and essentially an entirely new toy.
Right. And I'm not here to make an argument for or against third party guys.
What I'm trying to do is clear the air and help people understand, you know, how you were able to do characters that homage Transformer characters like Pretender Grimlock, for example. You know, they weren't those characters, but they did bear heavy resemblances. And whenever we go and basically, I'm trying to help bridge here, and I know it's kind of
the issue is that a lot of third party companies make something that is a direct representation of something that is seen in either animation, film, or comics. Where our design method was inspired by,
mm-hmm.
where it was never a direct representation of what's seen in the comics, film, TV, toys.
Exactly.
It's all inspired by.
Yeah. So that basically lays a foundation of some of the general rules and guidelines that you were able to build the company upon. You took inspirations, not just from Transformers. I saw a lot of other inspirations there, especially in the first Kickstarter. I mean, you had Masters of the Universe. You had Dino Saucers. I think there wasn't there some turtle inspirations.
Thundercats. It's from all over the place.
And it basically takes a lot of great inspiration from different brands and congeals them together into one. And and my person is. I know this is random. For listeners, this is a little look forward into the future. We are doing a Secret Santa for TFYLP. We're getting gifts for one another, and then on the episode before Christmas, we're going to open gifts from one another. We're via Secret Santa, and oh wow, I like the person I got. Great. I hate everybody else. No, just kidding. Yeah, we're doing a Secret Santa, and I just got my name that I got drawn. So awesome. And now I have a cat. Yes. All right, play with this too. Okay, so. Your employment with Hasbro ended. That, you know, obviously you're not with Hasbro anymore. So, tell us what you did after Hasbro. What was the genesis of Play With This Too?
Well, immediately after Hasbro, I spent about $2,000 on toys that I'd always wanted, but felt compelled not to own. So I went to a certain online retailer and I went click, 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 pre-order, 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 pre-order. Got a big, huge box of stuff shipped to me ASAP. And I kind of went through everything and I went, wow, this is a great representation of this character. Man, the engineering on this is really outstanding. and look at the packaging on this other toy. So I kind of had an epiphany at that point that I shouldn't just collect what I feel compelled to collect. Where I used to buy every single figure times two, one to keep in the box, one to open. I would collect all the variants. I would get all the licensed goods. I have hundreds and hundreds of t-shirts for Transformers. I would get everything. If it had Transformers wrapping paper, I would buy the wrapping paper. Lunch boxes. I can't tell you how many lunch bags I have from the Transformers movie.
Or even duct tape.
Even the duct tape. So when I kind of got this box of all this third-party toys, I realized that I was kind of missing the fun in collecting for a long time. And I wanted to collect stuff that I wanted on my shelf and that I didn't feel compelled to have on my shelf. So right now, what I'm collecting Transformers-wise is Generations and Masterpiece. And that's it. I'm not buying any licensed goods anymore. Maybe the rare piece here and there. Not into RID. Not down with the RID. And I got to reconnect with other brands that I had missed out on because all my money was being funneled to Transformers. I love Aliens and Predator. I love He-Man. I didn't have any of the He-Man figures from the Classics line until I left Hasbro, and I thought, you know what, that was a perfect time to go back and try and get them. And it was already a few years into the subscription. So it really kind of opened my eyes to collect what you want to collect. And what is it that you want to collect that's not on your shelf that no one's trying to make? And so I set out with a buddy with Trent to try and come up with something. And that little idea was – I was really interested into 3D printers. And I thought, man, 3D printers, that's going to be the future. What can I do now and try and get in on this on the ground floor? 3D printer, they're just not there as far as mass production and quality-wise. Quality being what most people expect when they purchase a store-bought figure or a third-party item. So I kind of took the idea and I said, all right, well, 3D printing is not going to work. What could we actually take something else and make it? And how would we do that? Where would we start? And we kind of went through a couple of ideas, and then somehow, I forget how it ended up. I was all into the Boss Fight Kickstarter, and I'm like, man, I've always wanted figures from this, like, Clash of the Titans type-esque, 300-esque, 3 3/4-inch figures. This is the type of stuff I want on my shelf that you really can't find in Marvel Universe or G.I. Joe. And I thought, man, let's make an action figure. And that kind of tumbled into making a homages of some characters, Transformers-wise, from the 80s. And since I was really big into He-Man at the time, I'm like, and I still am into the classics, and I'm like, would it be cool if we could have something that was like in the same scale? And I was playing around with some Marvel Legends figures and some Star Wars Black Series had started popping up. And I thought, man, maybe this scale is the future. And I kind of thought 12 inches going away and you kind of have 3 3/4-inch and 6-inch. And I don't want to step on Boss Fight's toes. They did such an amazing job with 3 3/4-inch. Let's go to 6-inch and let's play in that He-Man Marvel universe. And, that's where we came up with the idea of the scale and the type of figures we were going to do. We definitely didn't want to do anything transforming. We set out from the start as more people started coming on board, and most of the people that came on board were people I had worked with on Transformers, either through working with them at Hasbro or by hiring them as freelancers while I was at Hasbro. Definitely didn't want to do anything transforming. And that kind of,
even though you could theoretically,
yeah, we could, but then that adds, more to the cost. And I just didn't want to do anything transforming. And one of the guys on our team, Steve Redinger, he's been at he was at Hasbro for I think 22 years, and Aaron was at Hasbro for I think 18 years at the time. We were just tired of Transformers and didn't want to play with that gimmick anymore, but still wanted to do something that could kind of connect us to the people that already knew us. Something that no other company was really tackling, kind of reinvent, move forward and bring to light, kind of a lost era. And that's where we ended up. That's how we got to Boneyard and Jetstrike and Desolator.
Okay, so now we've talked about the genesis of Play With This 2, and you mentioned that the very first Kickstarter. Let's move on to the very first Kickstarter. You had a rather all-star crew of people that were working on it with you. I mean, there was you and Aaron Archer, who was a former brand manager of Transformers. And then you had, was it Ken Christensen?
Ken Christensen came on. Simon Furman, Trent Troop, Eric Siebenhaler. These are all people that had worked on Transformers either through Hasbro or through a licensee. And Mark Wong was another one. And pretty much, I think, almost the entire crew, except for two or three people, had worked on the brand in some way in an official capacity.
And then the first Kickstarter, what was your monetary goal for that?
$80,000 was our goal, and I think we came in at, we were just short $8,300, I think, of the goal. Which is, you know,
it's not a lot, but it's a lot.
Yeah, it's kind of like a used car away from being your goal. Had one retailer reach out and said, "Hey, I'm willing to put this money in," and I said, "No, you know what? It's that's not fair to you, and I think the project needs to live and die on its own, based on what the fan reaction is and what they think of the product." So having a retailer kicking money at the last second, it didn't seem right to me. And so I said, "Thank you, but no, let's just let it live and die on its own." So we came up a little shy of our goal. And I definitely can look back at the first Kickstarter and say that was a huge learning opportunity for us. It was very, looking back on it, it was definitely confusing, some of the options, how we tiered it. We tiered the options so that to try and get people to get a figure that they may not necessarily want, to try and drive that pledge up in the hopes of getting that later figure, or in having to buy multiple figures in order to get that one special figure that they wanted. And I think for the second Kickstarter, it was much simpler, where, hey, there's 10 options. You can pledge for as many figures as you want. And then at the end, you'll tell us, "Hey, I want 10 of this guy, or I want one of him, two of him, three of him, one of him." I thought it was way, way more simpler the second time around. And that was definitely our goal the second time, to make it as simple as possible for everyone.
Well, that was part of my next question, is that the very first Kickstarter, there was a number of options that you had. I mean, and a number of different figures that you had. You had the Desolator, and I believe was Boneyard not part of that as well?
Boneyard, just right. It was Desolator and Bloodbath, and their various repaints / mixing the parts together.
And then you also had the tech drones. You had the headshots. You had, I believe there were some B-Mogs in there too, weren't there?
There were some free B-Mogs. There was some additional B-Mogs we were going to make. Headshots, which I still love that idea. Some headstands for the headshots. And that's one of the coolest things. I think that's the thing I wish we could have made out of everything we had, because You see this with a lot of Marvel figures and He-Man and some DC guys, where you have a character and you got one or two extra heads of them. What do you do? What do you do with those heads? You put them away? You put them next to them? I hate having to put a head next to a figure by his feet. So we came up with this idea of the headstand, where you take the extra head, you pop it on a stand, and the stand looks cool. It's maybe a robot body, or it's a pedestal, or it's a statue or something.
Yeah. It's kind of like Transformer weapons. You know, it's like if you're not using them in one mode, what do you do with it? You just, you know, throw it off to the side, you know?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You actually had something that, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, weren't some of them, some of the headstands look like pikes, like you had a head on a pike?
Weapons were, it was like a staff, and you could put the head on a staff, and there'd be like falcon wings around the staff, like it's like a magical staff, and that could play into the story. Some were like blobs, and you could put multiple heads on it, so you could have like multiple heads coming out of this oozing mass type of thing. And I think that's the thing I really want to see the most come forward in some way or shape or form.
Yeah. So we move on to the second Kickstarter, and like you said, it was much simpler in that you had only two different molds essentially to choose from. And you did away with the tech drones, at least for now. You're still offering BMOGs and, my reflection. Yeah. you were still offering BMOGs, but however, you increased the price of the Kickstarter. Why was that?
Okay.
Why did you make it more?
So in between the time of the first Kickstarter and a second Kickstarter, and there's a couple of reasons why we did that. The factory said, hey, we did some research on you and who you're trying to cater to. So we're actually going to increase the price. And they increased the price by almost 50%.
Wow.
And we said, okay, well, thank you, but no thank you. So that led me back on a long journey to another guy I used to work with at Hasbro, who's no longer there. And he put me in touch with this other company in China and said, oh, yeah, we can actually do this and this and this, and it's actually cheaper than the original quote that we got from the first company. So we thought, all right, well, we could start off with two figures. We'll change them around so they share more parts in between them. We're going to add some better packaging, but we're going to add some more weapons. And each character will come with at least two heads. So we thought, all right, the goal should be, let's get the figures funded. Because of the rising cost of labor and oil and all the other costs associated with manufacturing, we had to increase the funding goal by $10,000. But we were also able to offer 10 figures right off the bat, as opposed, I think we started with five last time. There were five different figure options to start with. This time we said there were 10, and you can get, there were two different molds, five painted five different ways. And, we took the tech drones out. We took all the t-shirts out and the posters out and all that other stuff, just because it adds to the funding goal. And our goal was just, look, let's just get a product into people's hands. Yeah. And so that's why we had to increase the goal, manufacturing cost. But it also worked out in our favor that we were able to offer more figures.
So the second Kickstarter, was more money, and you got not even half, really, of what your pledged goal was. Whereas with the first Kickstarter, was less money, not a whole lot less. What was it? Maybe 10 grand.
Yeah.
So it was less money, but you came within $8,300 of that goal. So how would you, in your own words, explain the very sharp drop off from the first Kickstarter to the second Kickstarter. Now, we know that there's a lot of criticisms from the general public that came. We're going to speak about that later in more detail. As we all know, this fandom, the collector fan base, and not just Transformers, I'm talking about just in general, can be very for lack of a better word, tactless. So we'll talk a little bit about that later. But in your own words, how would you explain the sharp drop-off? Why do you think the second one failed even more so than the first?
Well, I think there's a couple things that we can attribute to that. I think we didn't strike while the iron was hot. And I think if we had maybe launched into the second Kickstarter within a month or two, we would have done a lot better. We might have gotten funded. But after the first Kickstarter, you know, so much goes into it. You know, it was 2 years of work, and you're checking your phone or you're checking your computer every other minute for 30 days straight. It's all you think about. You put on weight, you lose hair. You get stressed.
Get gray.
Yeah, you start getting a lot more gray in your beard. So I definitely needed a break. I think the other guys just needed a break, because we were every day for 30 days just trying to pump out some new piece of art or try and promote and try and tell people about it. And we just needed a break. There's also the cost of producing a prototype. So we thought, all right, well, let's get two prototypes. Some of the criticism that we read for the first Kickstarter is that we didn't get the prototype out there soon enough, and we didn't get it painted fast enough. And there are some reasons for that. We had a setback health-wise of one of our members. The second Kickstarter, we wanted to make sure we had both prototypes. We wanted to make sure they were both painted before we started. That was very important to us. And we went back and redesigned them. We had them share more parts so that it would reduce our tooling cost and hopefully lower the price per figure as well. It costs a lot of money to redesign and then to do the CAD work and then to print. The 3D printing company we're using is a company called R&D Technologies. They're out of Rhode Island. They do a lot of work for NECA, for Hasbro. They have a really cool office, and they have some of the best 3D printers in the world. And that's all they do is print prototypes for toys. So, of course, they're the people I know from having worked at the Big H. They're people I can just drive right up to. They're 2 hours from my house. And it costs money to do all that stuff. So you kind of have to save up for that money or sell a toy here and there to try and raise that money. And then you have to plan the Kickstarter, and you have to get your quotes from your overseas guys. You have to figure out all the logistics that go into a Kickstarter. Okay, if this factory fails, do we have a backup factory? If this shipping company can't deliver, do we have a second shipping company? If there's a strike in LA at the shipping docks, is there a place in Washington, in the state of Washington, that we can go through? If we go through Washington, who's our backup here? So there's a lot of logistics that go into it just to make sure that the product gets into people's hands in a timely fashion. So that took time to create. And then all the back and forth between, hey, I got to ship it to this guy to take pictures, ship it to this guy to paint, ship it back to this guy for more pictures, ship it to this guy, he's going to take it to a convention. I think the lack of time was the biggest issue between the first and the second Kickstarter. And I think, another thing is, I think people were kind of burnt out from all the marketing that we did the first time around. All this, we were pushing really hard the first time. The second time we were more like laissez-faire, more laid back in how we approached the marketing stuff. So I think the community, the fan base as a whole, was also a little burnt out about hearing about these figures. And finally, Kickstarter's down. Kickstarter's down overall on many different projects. It's down. So, you know, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I actually read a what you were saying here. There was a comment made by a person in one of the groups on Google whenever I shared the promo for this episode. And he said, and it kind of ties in with what you said. Honestly, so tired of hearing about all this stuff. I wish the people who were interested in them would go talk about them, because they're not Transformers. They don't transform, and I don't see the point. And that's why some people. It says there is a small minority of Transformers fans who do care about these things at all, and I don't get why they keep trying to push them, or Transformer-related news groups and forums that keep reporting them. Now,
well, I think that's a person who just doesn't understand. You know, I would wager that that person might have been brought in post movies, because there's a mm-hmm. big dynamic in the fandom between collectors our age and younger collectors who were brought in post G1, who were brought in with the films, or who were brought in with Armada, who don't maybe necessarily realize the homage connection, who don't maybe have that that knowledge of where we're coming from. And plus, there's a lot of Transformers product that just doesn't transform. Mm-hmm. You know, well, there's a lot of toys out there that you know, those ugly Titan things. But there's a lot of licensed good that don't transform.
Yeah. Well, you know, you and I were talking briefly pre-show, and I told you that Chad Williams and I were brainstorming about things to ask you and everything. And we were talking about pros and cons about it. You know, because whenever you talk about a subject, you don't want to talk about everything glowing, because it gets boring. Yet you don't want to harp on something too much, because it sounds like you're a hater. But one of the things that we were talking about is like, well, what are some of the criticisms against the Play With This 2? And some of the criticisms that he and I had were, well, you were homaging Pretenders, which Pretenders are a very niche thing in the fandom. Me, I'm a huge Headmasters fan, but I also know that Headmasters fandom is a niche within the Transformers fandom. Not everybody likes the Headmasters, even though, you know, we got Titan Wars coming up next year with all these Titan Masters, but there's going to be a lot of people that's not going to be on board with it, because that's not their bag, baby. Yeah. But quite frankly, you're appealing to one subsection of a niche fandom. And that's both a praise and a critique, because, you know, these fans are getting something that is more detailed, very, very beautiful renditions or homages to characters that are very near and dear. I mean, Pretender Grimlock, Pretender Starscream, you know, those shells and those designs are just gorgeous. And then see them on the detailed level that you are homaging them with is just amazing. But you are also appealing to the Masters type fans, you know, people that like the larger action figure type group. And sometimes you don't have crossover between Transformer fans and Masters fans. You know, Chad, he likes Transformers, but he doesn't care for Masters. Me, I love Transformers, but I was a He-Man fan from 1981 up until Transformers came out. You know, I had nearly every He-Man figure with the exceptional Castle Grayskull and, you know, the big play sets. I had those. You know, I had the He-Man stuff. So, like, I was totally on board with these. And Chad, he's like, I like the designs, but he says, I'm not into that kind of figure. But he said, those weapons are awesome. You know, but there was something in there for everyone.
Yeah, You know, I think what we were trying to do ultimately was, what do we want to see on our shelves?
Mm-hmm.
Like the team, like, what do we want to see in our shelves? You know, Albie is very much into Transformers. He wants to see some Transformers stuff on his shelf. Pierre and I are huge He-Man fans. We get all the classic stuff. We like figures that fit in well. I collect like a bunch of different other figures from like Spawn and Hulk and Thor, because they kind of fit into that He-Man aesthetic, and they look good, like if you put them in front of Castle Grayskull or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I like figures that complement other things that I'm collecting. And I think that's where we're coming from. We're coming from, what do we want to see in our shelves? And if people like it, hey, you know, let's all get together on Kickstarter and make this happen. Not enough people either knew about it or wanted to, or like the aesthetic that we chose. And there's a reason we chose that aesthetic. So I think that's that's our perspective on it, is like, what do we want to see in our shelves? And then let's see if other people share that desire as well.
Well, you know, and like you touched on briefly, not everybody, even if they are a Transformer fan, you know, this particular person that I read, he may have came on post movie, and he may be totally unaware of the homages to Pretenders that they were, because I even had a deal or had an instance on one of the Facebook groups just yesterday. I posted a image of the five Nissan molds from Masterpiece. I posted an image. Someone had no idea that there was any difference between Silver Streak and Blue Streak. And he's like, aren't they the same thing? Well, in a way, yes, but no. You know, Silver Streak's deco was completely different. I educated the guy on, you know, there are differences between these two characters and molds now. I mean, it might be the exact same toy shape and design and everything, but just like Starscream, Thundercracker, and Skywarp, they're the exact same toy, just painted differently. So, you know, there's people out there, and you see it all the time in these Facebook groups, that don't know about everything in Transformers. I mean, you know, I don't know a Transformer fan that does know everything there is to know about Transformers. You know, there's, you know, you and I, you know, we love Generation One, and, you know, we're really into that. But there might be things in, you know, Beast Wars. I love Beast Wars, but I'm sure there's Beast War characters right now that you could probably flip an image up on the screen, and I'd have a hard time naming that character.
Yeah, sure. You know? I mean, that's with anything, you know, Action Masters or Micro Masters or RID 2000. I mean, anything. There's some people who get very specific in what they collect, and there's some people who are very general in what they collect and have a general knowledge.
So, do you think it's fair to say that that it is a overall critique that you were too specific in who you were trying to appeal to? And do you think that lent to the unsuccessfulness of these Kickstarters?
I think we were trying to appeal to people who, not necessarily one group of people. I think we were trying to appeal to people who were action figure fans and who like really cool action figures and people who like to customize action figures and people who some people who like Transformers, some people who like He-Man. But at its core, it's an action figure. That's what it is. And that's why we offered those play with yourselves option where you can take a figure and it comes all in white and you can paint it however you want to paint it. Because that's the very core of what the project is. Ultimately the character representation doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it's a action figure. And sometimes it just has to stand as an action figure.
So we're getting more critical here. Let's step it up. Where did you, advertise and where did you promote the play with his two Kickstarters and the figures? Was it solely on Transformer and He-Man boards, or did you just go everywhere and anywhere? How did you promote it?
The first one, I think we went about it the wrong way, where we would kind of find any board where we could post. And it's like, okay, it's a Star Wars board, but that doesn't really pertain, but let's start a thread anyway. I don't know what the success of that was. I don't have like a master matrix spreadsheet that could show us exactly who came where. What we did look at for the second Kickstarter was, all right, Kickstarter provides the project creator with some statistics on which sites did this person click a link to come to the Kickstarter. Did they go to Kickstarter? Did they go to, say, TFW and find a link there, and that led them to the Kickstarter and so on? So we looked at that and we said, all right, these are the people out of that wide net that we threw the first time that are interested in this product. Mm-hmm. So let's focus our attention here. And it came down to really a lot of the usual suspects. He-Man.org, TFW, all the Transformer sites, basically. Facebook, Twitter, the Tumblr, Grindr, all the usual suspects.
But it's like for this podcast, you know, we are distributed by tftalk.net, and I use Google Analytics, and I look to see where our traffic comes from. And, you know, be told, the largest part of it comes from social media, Facebook, Twitter. I'd say we over 50% of our listeners find us through social media. And I think that that message boards are kind of a dying breed, honestly. We have a message board at tftalk.net, but nobody hardly uses it, you know, because, I mean, really, it's so early 2000s now, you know?
Right. Well, we looked at our statistics, and we found that 27%, the first time it was 27%, and the second time it was 26%, and then it tapered down to 21% for a very particular message board. It was TFW. That was where most of our pledges were coming from. More so than, like, you know, there was people who would go on Kickstarter and just Google or search it in Kickstarter. But as far as message boards goes, that is a huge number of backers and money coming from a message board. Hello?
I had my mic muted for some reason. Sorry. I know that last year at TFCon USA was the first time that you and Aaron Archer joined us on TFYLP as guests. You later came on the show as a regular. But back then, you were doing the podcast scene, advertising on podcasts, and you also had some panels at TFCon both last year and this year. Tell us a little bit about your campaign across the podcast platform and the convention panel platform. Do you think that garnered a lot of attention and interest?
When you see something in person, it changes your perspective a lot on something. And I don't necessarily say that about this project, but about most things in general, about a car, a toy you might want to buy, when you say, oh, I don't know about it. But when you see it in person and you get a really close look at it, sometimes you get to hold it. I really think that changes your perspective a lot. So we focused a lot on trying to get to as many conventions as possible. TFCon and BotCon and RetroCon. Yeah, there was a lot of conventions. And we even tried making it overseas, but the timing just didn't work out, unfortunately, to have them back here and have them present for TFCon. So I think being at conventions and actually meeting people and talking to them and having them see our sunny disposition or having them say disparaging things to our faces, I think all that helps. I think it helps that to show that, hey, we're human beings and we're not a faceless corporation. So I think being at conventions definitely helps. Doing panels certainly helps. I mean, my panel at TFCon this year had really nothing to do with this, but it's just kind of an outlet for people to I guess meet me in a sense.
Yeah. Well,
I think there was a first part of your question that I didn't answer because I forgot it.
I was actually trying to formulate my next question here. So, I'll just go ahead and say it. You know, you sent Boneyard and Jet Strike to me, and I photographed them, and Orson and I took them with us to TF Expo down in Wichita earlier this year. And I have to say that everybody that commented on the figures as they were there at the booth absolutely were floored at how gorgeous they were. And I don't know how many people said, I want that. When is that coming out? I want that. You know, and so many people, I mean, even in the fragile nature that they were, they wanted to reach and touch them and they couldn't, you know, because they were just so gorgeous.
All right. Here's the thing. And I think that takes us back to why the Kickstarters didn't work out. This community is very used to having these items presented to them in a certain way. They usually get, sample shots as the first thing they'll see, followed soon after by colored shots, test shots, and then package samples, and then, hey, 3 months after finally hearing about this product, it's out already for sale. We were presenting it in a different venue. We're presenting it through Kickstarter, where it's, hey, I'm going to pre-order this, but it's going to take maybe a year for me to get it. So a lot can happen in a year. Who's interested in it?
Forget about it.
Manufacturing can be delayed. You know, it's a very different venue. So we're presenting 3D printed prototypes. People say, well, why can't you show us a plastic version? Well, a plastic version would be made from a mold. When we don't have the money to make a mold, that's why we're going through Kickstarter. So because we're an American company that doesn't have necessarily the ties to a factory in China that some other companies or groups might, things are more expensive for us, and things are not as easy for us to obtain. And that's why we went the Kickstarter route, because we just didn't have money. We had no backers to put up that money. But I think if we had gone the traditional route of, let's say, a third party company, where, hey, here's the plastic test shot, few weeks or months later, here's the colored shot, and then here's the final product a few months after that, I think people would have eaten it up. It's just we couldn't go that route because we didn't have the money to produce it that way. So we presented something that was outside the norm. And I think that did contribute to why the Kickstarters didn't work out.
Okay. Building on that, and this is a little more cutting of a question. Why do you think some people are so against the idea of Play With This Too? Do you think it was the figures, or do you think it had something to do with people maybe having problems with you, other people that were involved with Play With This Too?
The funniest thing I read, and this was during the first Kickstarter, is like, these people took the knowledge that they got at Hasbro and went and did something very similar to that using that knowledge they learned at Hasbro. Meaning, we learned how to make toys at Hasbro, and then we left Hasbro and used that knowledge to make toys somewhere else. And I thought, isn't that
imagine
just
that?
Isn't that just like, hey, I used to work for this company. I learned all this stuff. I put it on my resume, and now I work for this other company doing the same stuff I learned at that company. Isn't that what it's like?
I'm a truck driver. I have driven for three different companies. And yeah. Guess what? I drove a truck at all three places.
Yeah. So that was the funniest thing. I'm like that was just the most asinine thing I had read. And I just thought it was so hilarious that I'm not allowed to take the knowledge I learned of how the toy industry works and how to manufacture a product from start to finish, go somewhere else and do that. You know how many people in the toy industry go from Hasbro to Lego to Mattel, NECA, all back and forth. Everybody pretty much knows each other in the toy industry because they all know someone who used to work for some other company, or they used to work for that other company with that guy, and they all switch companies.
Well, some of the people that freelance for you have already went on to other toy companies, haven't they?
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the people who freelance for us at Hasbro don't freelance there anymore. Because the teams change and not everyone's going to say, oh, well, this is the guy who used to get, well, I'm going to call my guy now. I'm not going to call the guy you used to call because I'm in charge now and I'm going to call my guy. So that happens. That happens. Aaron, in fact, now he's back at Hasbro now, working on a Littlest Pet Shop as a freelancer. So, you know, it happens. I think that's why some people didn't like us. Because we had that official, we had worked on official product, official Transformer stuff, and then we had gone on and tried to do something. But I think they forget where we're coming from and that we're trying to do something to connect with you as well. And we all share a love for what this is. We all have the same passion. And that's why I find it so interesting when people who love the same thing fight so much, whether it's toys, a brand, whether you like He-Man and you fight, oh, I'm with Emiliano. Oh, I'm against Emiliano. Transformers, screw the movies. Oh, screw Bay. And oh, every G1 sucked, whatever. Armada sucked. You all love the same thing. What is the issue? Yeah. You guys all love the same stuff. So I think it comes down to that. We're just another section for people to discuss. I think it's the podcasters were definitely some of the podcasters were our cheerleaders, and they're great, and thank you to them. Some were obviously critical, and yeah, they're allowed to be critical, but I kind of laugh at the critiques too, because – what is a podcast? It's a radio show. So what do you need on a radio show? You need stuff to talk about. What is there to talk about? All right. So here's something interesting we can talk about. And if we all say, oh, okay, it's good. Yeah, it's good. Okay. I like it. I like this about it. Does that really fill up a whole podcast? So no. So there were even podcasts that would make a pledge on the Kickstarter so they can comment. And then remove their pledge, or they'd up and down their pledge, and then they take their pledge away. They never had intentions of pledging. They just wanted something to talk about on their show. So I think that's kind of a cheap way for people to get subjects. They're not creative enough to fulfill a podcast about a subject without having to resort to shenanigans. Mm-hmm. So I think that answers.
It can be very, very tricky. I mean, and going back, not to backpedal too much, but you know, talking about working on something and then moving on and doing something else. There's been rumor that different third parties, some of the designers that used to work on Transformers at Takara are some of the people designing some of these third-party figures.
Right. That we're getting. I cannot confirm or deny those rumors.
But, I mean, you can see sometimes there's like design aesthetics like, well, that is really similar to something that
– a really good designer – will recognize instantly, oh, that guy designed that toy, or that guy designed that toy, or it looks like that guy might have been the guy who did that one too. And the same thing is said for art. Oh, that's I knew who drew that. That's so-and-so. It's a Manet. It's a Picasso. It's an Archer. It's a Marcello. So you can see that there has been some crossover in the design and art-wise over to other fields. But, you know, some...
And there's nothing wrong with it because they're doing a job.
They're freelancers and they're paid to do work. And that's what it comes down to. Hey, I can't fault any of those guys.
No. So let's talk a little bit about, I want to preface this that I understand it can be a very touchy subject because it's very personal. But I'm not going to try to play softball here because people want to know and need to know some of these things, and see how dirty this got. There's a lot of dirty crap that went on, especially with this, second Kickstarter. And me as a fan, I'm actually embarrassed to be part of the fandom, having heard some of this stuff, but personal attacks on you in specific, and also your family.
Yeah.
Tell us some of that stuff.
Okay. So there's, you know, the internet, you gotta have tough skin to be on the internet. But some people, who knows why they do certain things. I'm sure there's any number of reasons why. Some people want to try and they want to contact your wife. They want to get messages to your wife. They want to get information out of your wife, or they want to send letters to your house, or they want to post pictures of your house with your address. That stuff's not, that's not ever cool. You know, celebrities.
Damn right, illegal.
I'm not a celebrity and I don't want to go through that stuff. Yeah. I had a lawyer, call me and he's like, listen, if any of this gets out of hand, you just need to let me know and I'm going to take care of it. And you know, sometimes you find out who it is. But I feel bad for those people. I'm like, why'd you have to do that? Really? Like, so many people are so brave online. And I know some of those people were at TFCon while I was there. And I was just kind of looking for them and waiting for them to say something or make a face. And you know what? If someone had come up to me and had the balls to say something to my face, I would have saluted them because they had the testicular fortitude to actually come up and claim with a face right in front of you. Hey,
that begs the question. Did anybody have the balls to come up to you and critique you to your face?
No. I was waiting for it all weekend. I was nervous. I was anxious. I was excited about it. No one. I even said in my panel, hey, if you have any disparaging things to say about me, please come over to my booth and let me have it. No one. People are very brave on the internet. And they never back it up. So I'm waiting for that one person to back it up. I mean, I don't know where it's going to lead to. I'm certainly not saying, hey, I want to fight anyone, or I'm waiting for someone to fight me. No, I'm just...
But is there anyone out there willing to speak up and face-to-face and say, hey, I have a personal problem with you and what you're doing here? And ultimately... this goes back to what you were saying. It's like, why would people do this? Ultimately, we're talking about toys here, people. Toys.
And it goes back to what I said, where we all love the same thing. We're all fans of the same thing. So why do we have to bother my wife, who got freaked out, bother my friend?
Justifiably so.
Yeah, she has nothing to do with this. She's my wife. She's a doctor. She works. She has no interest in this. As long as I keep my toys in the basement, out of sight, out of mind, she's happy. You know, why do you have to bother my wife? And my fear was that, okay, that could lead to someone maybe posting where my kids go to school or posting a picture of my kid that they took from the car. I mean, crazy things like that went through my head. It's an insane thing that happened. So dealing with the stress of the Kickstarter, And then someone starts doing that stuff and bothering your friends and bothering your family and then sending a letter to your house. That is just, it's way too far.
It's unreal to even conceive of, in my opinion. I reiterate, they're toys. You know, if you don't like the product, don't back it. Don't have anything to do with it. Just ignore it. Yeah, if you don't like it, ignore it. But if you love it, talk about it, you know, and support it. That's what I don't understand. Why do people have to go so flipping mental and do these crazy things that are illegal? I mean, threatening you via U.S. mail, threatening your family, and saying disparaging things about you online is one thing, but actually going so far to contact you in a personal, direct manner.
Yeah.
And say threatening things to you is uncalled for.
You know, and we have a pretty good idea. I mean, I think we know who that person was, and who she might be, and other people who play in that world. But you know, it sucks too. I sent a message on Facebook from my personal account. Had nothing to do with Play With This too. A personal message written in Ricknacular, which is the vernacular form of Rick. Which is very sarcastic and very funny and making fun of the world and everything. And I wrote it funny and I sent it to my friends on Facebook, to like 80 people to my friends on Facebook. And I thought, all right, well, they're my friends on Facebook. Hey, just share a link. Not thinking, I should probably have been a little more careful with who I'm friends with on Facebook, because sure enough, that ends up online, that message. And it's like, it's completely taken out of context. Because you're reading it with your own frame of reference and not the reference of who I am and how I write personally and how I speak in a live form versus written. So that hurt because that was a friend of mine who put that out there for the world. Taking it out of context. So it's like, all right, well now I can't have Facebook. So I went through and I got rid of 200 some people on Facebook, mostly who were fans of Transformers. And that sucks, because you know, Facebook is a thing where you want to share with people, you know, your likes, pictures of your collection, pictures of your kids, whatever. And, now, you know, some people are just really shitty. And
well, there's people that, and if it's any consolation, listener Matthew Robert Ignash, he posted, he was also targeted by internet trolls for simply voicing support for Play With This too.
Yeah. I felt bad for him. I told him, I reached out to him. I'm like, you know, Matthew, I feel really bad and I apologize to you that, people are attacking you and some people even impersonating you. Because you happen to like this and because you happen to be very adamant speaking about it online. And I think I even told him, like, look, man, why don't you just try and back off a little bit online? Because it's not fair to you that people are attacking you. It's not fair to any. Look, it's the same thing goes with a sports team. You're going to give me crap because I like the Eagles, even though I live in New England. I mean, the Eagles aren't the best team, but you know, I'm a Philly guy, so I gotta like the Eagles. You know, you don't need to post on a message board 60 pages of how much you hate this project or how much you dislike this one person because they like this project. I think it sucks, and I think sometimes in our fandom we get very toxic, unnecessarily so, because at the end of the day, what do? We all love this brand. And whether you collect the toys or just like the shows or just like the movies or just like the t-shirts, we all like the same thing. And as human beings, we just want to create conflict where there shouldn't have to be any conflict.
Just collect what you like, people. I mean, I know that's one of the things that we try to instill through this YouTube show and through this podcast. In that in collecting, everybody has their own personal likes and dislikes. You know, I love Headmasters, Target Masters, Power Masters. I love the Masterpiece line. I am a huge supporter of third-party products. You know, I don't care whether or not they're illegal or not. You know, the legality, I don't give a damn if owning this Dinoichi is wrong and doesn't support Hasbro. Okay, I buy Hasbro products. I also buy third-party products like this Fans Project toy because why? I like it. I'm a collector and I like it. I like Hasbro stuff, and it's like your logo. It's like your slogan. I like their stuff, but I can play with this too, you know? And it's, there's nothing wrong with it. Yet you see so much outspoken support in the negative of, well, I don't collect third party because I feel that it's wrong and that it's detrimental to the brand of Transformers. You're free to feel that way and you're free to express that with your wallets. However, you know, you got to look at the antithesis of that in that, you know, third parties are also free research and development for Hasbro and Takara say, hey, they can look at these successful third party figures and say, hey, fans really dug that. Why don't we do it? And I firmly believe that big green Hulk right there is a result of third parties.
I actually agree with you there. I really think Combiner Wars came from just looking at all the third party combiners and realizing, wow, they look at all the different Predakings they got.
And fans want them. Yeah. Cool. And we're willing to spend big money. I mean, this little guy here is like 60 or, well, this guy's like $80. $80 for this guy.
Yeah.
You know, and if Hasbro had produced this, it might have been, what, 30? You know, well,
it also comes down to aesthetic and parts counts and laps and.
Yeah, this thing's got insane parts counts.
It's very hard to compare the two as far as price wise, but.
But
you got to collect the so yeah, I like the Aliens and Predator. So I have the Predator trophy base, and I like to have my G.I. Joes on that base shooting down aliens. Because I like that. I think that's cool as hell.
Yeah. Well, like I've said, I am a Transformer man through and through. You know, wear the shirts. I've got tons of Transformer shirts. My wallpapers on my computers are Transformers. I've got posters. I've got original artwork hanging in this room. Display cases full of Transformers. But yet, on a table right over here, what do I have? Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Because why? I like the four turtles. That's all I've got is just the four turtles, but I like them. You know, I'm not a turtle collector, but I got those. I do still have a 2002 He-Man and Skeletor, Battle Cat, and Panther. They're not on display, but I do have them. You know, because why do I even own them? Because I like them. I was totally on board with that 2002 relaunch for He-Man. I was getting them all. I just got so damn pissed off at Mattel for, okay, let's put out a case assortment of five He-Mans, one Man-at-Arms, and one Orko. You know,
go to hell. Because I was really into that line too, and a lot of the figures from that line. I
wound up selling it all because I just got tired of going to stores and seeing wave upon wave upon wave and nothing but He-Man and Skeletor. I mean, a lot of Transformer fans can relate by going to, you know, even right now, if you were to go to a local Walmart, you're likely to find Wave 1 and 2 Combiner Wars. And you're lucky if you find anything past Wave 1 or 2. You know, I can go to my local Walmart right now, and there's Wave 3 on the shelf. And that's it. There's nothing past Wave 3. Even though we're on, what, 5 now? Getting ready to be 6?
Yeah, we never got Wave 3 in Connecticut.
So...
And we still have Wave 2 sitting at Walmart.
So Mattel isn't the only one that befalls this the same problem, but yet,
it's stuff like that. You know, there are really two different issues. The thing with the case assortments and how figures are packaged inside a case assortment, yeah, that's at the company level. But stuff where, like, hey, my Target, Walmart tier, you didn't get assortment 3. That's more of – that's not really Hasbro's fault. That's more of the
– Well, don't you think that the company
– how they order.
Well, don't you think the companies are more at fault for for producing so heavily on the first wave or two and then letting up on subsequent waves? Or do they do that and subsequent waves just wind up sitting in warehouses and that's how we get warehouse fines?
Yeah, that is part of it. But yeah, they do tend to retailers like to order heavy on the first waves because they like to have the stock. They want to show that they have product on their shelves. So that's true of everything. Marvel, Star Wars, Transformers. That's a toy industry standard, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, let's get back and focus more on Play With This too. Bottom line, okay, do you think the Kickstarters, this is a question that was posed to me, was the issue, you think, a matter of waning interest in crowdsourcing or due to other factors?
Well,
what do you think about that?
Well, I think we hit it. We hit that one earlier.
Overall, well, I mean the crowdsourcing.
Yeah, overall, Kickstarter is down. You look at similar projects during similar times. Overall, it's down. And I think particularly for us, people are used to having product offered to them in a certain way. And Kickstarter didn't really fit that mold.
See what you did there.
Yeah, I think that those were two big things. And it also came down to timing. Too much time between the first Kickstarter and the second Kickstarter, but that was really a cost issue and an exhaustion issue on our part.
Well, I think the big question here now, at this point in time, you've been through two Kickstarters, both of them failed. There were some great, great things that we saw. I mean, like I said earlier, I myself held Boneyard and Desolator and Jet Strike in my hands. I am a hands-on guy, and I fell in love with these things the moment I held them, and they were just in very fragile prototype form, but yet they were so gorgeous. I'm like, I would have a lot of fun with these. You know, the question on everybody's mind is Play With This 2 dead?
I think we have to look at it and maybe rebrand or restructure how we offer product. I think we're going to stay far away from Kickstarter. That obviously it doesn't work. As far as the figures like Boneyard, Desolator, those figures, I think we might retire those ideas. We're just kind of put them on the back burner. There's some other things we want to do. It's possible that we're going to upload the weapons and the tech drones onto Shapeways and let people kind of buy them. We toyed around a little bit with putting the actual 6-inch figures on Shapeways, but it would be very expensive for people to print those. So I don't think it's worth it. I don't think anyone's going to do that. But hey, if you're out there listening, let us know. So I think some of the stuff we design will exist on Shapeways eventually. One of the good things that happened at TFCon was I was approached by two different manufacturers, and they knew who I was. They were interested in the product I had designed. They were interested in the work I had done previously, and I think we are on a path now where something will definitely get made via a partnership with a third-party company that's already established. I really can't get into any more than that. It's early talks. We've shown some designs. We've talked back and forth. We had great conversation at TFCon and had some great follow-up emails. So we'll see what happens, but everyone on the P2 team is on board to continue in some way, shape, or form. And I think it's just better for everyone if all that product comes from overseas. And I think it's easier for the consumer to buy into that product if it's coming from someone who they might already be a fan of, and it comes through the regular retailers that they're already used to dealing with.
Well, and if you think about it, a lot of these third party companies, as they pop up, Bad Cube was basically a reboot, I guess, if you were, of Cubex. But everybody knew that some of the people that worked at Cubex went to Bad Cube. And whenever Bad Cube first came out, people were leery of their product because, well, Cubex Huff had so many issues. You know, I'm not sure I don't want to buy on board with Cubex Bad Cube because, well, I'm not sure of the quality. And now that they've had some more releases, I've personally held their Backland in hand, and I want one. That thing is awesome. You know, it's like a little masterpiece Outback, you know. There's other third-party companies that are popping up left and right. Some of them do well, some of them not so well. You know, some of them kind of languish. You know, their quality is hit and miss. Just Toys that folded here a while back? They had some hit or miss releases. Impossible Toys. That's it. I'm sorry. Impossible Toys.
Was there an MCC that also closed down?
I'm not sure.
Company.
But Impossible Toys. I love the Valkyrie that they made, and I love. I've got the Alligatorcon that's over here. Love that thing. I mean, it's loose. It's kind of floppy and loose, but the design on it is awesome. I love it. But some of their other releases were just not up to par. But then you have companies, for example, Mastermind Creations, Maki Toy, Fans Project. There's countless other ones that's popping up left and right. And I use companies as a general term. Because that's what people, that's probably the best way to for some people to relate to these entities, yeah, that put out
one or two guys working out of their house when they have a full-time job and they have a friend at the factory or whatever. So
yeah,
that's how it exists. And I will say that the ones I've spoken, this is the way we originally wanted to go. Or that I was pointed to go by a retailer who said, hey, I need you to meet this guy and this guy and talk to them, see if we can work something out. It didn't really hit until my name was more out there and I kind of showed some of the ideas we had that it finally worked out where we were approached and we said, hey, we want you guys to do some work for us. Maybe you guys can do some things. Maybe you guys can give us some ideas. There's definitely an impasse in the third party industry where there's a lot of repetition amongst the different groups. Some, you know,
50 million Reddit kings out there.
Yeah. So maybe, you know, so I hope something works out there. I think it will.
That's awesome. So long story short, and the answer to the question is, Play With This 2 dead. Yes and no. It's dead kind of as it was, but it will live on in other ways.
It is will
most live fair on assessment.
I think that if anything that we would design would be released by another company, I think part of the agreement would be that some kind of branding would be on there as designed by or assistance by, something like that. Mm-hmm. And of course, okay. You probably would see us promoting the heck out of it too.
Well, I know for one that there are some things that I absolutely was dying to get my hands on. You know, I love Boneyard, Jet Strike, and Desolator. Desolator, I told you in private conversations before, you know, I have a sentimental attachment to because of my brother getting me Skullgren as a gift years and years ago. And for a long time, Skullgren was the only pretender that I had. And his unique design aesthetic was so awesome. And then I fully admit, and I am not ashamed of it, whenever I first held your Desolator prototype in hand, I was sitting in there in front of my light box, and I was holding it like a baby in my hand. I was crying because it was so beautiful. I did. I know it sounds silly, but I did. I cried because wow. It just represented the character so well. And I'm like, it don't have the little robot, but it's Skullgren, you know? And I loved it.
And well, you know, those ideas are in the back burner for right now. But who knows if they'll ever show up again or if there's any other company in there that's interested in maybe tackling it on their own or working with us to bring some other incarnation of it to life. So who knows? Ask me again next year.
Well, you know, I've said what I felt about it. What about you? What is the most, what thing is the most disappointing to you that did not get produced that you wish had seen? Obviously you wanted the whole thing to come to fruition. I mean, that's Captain Obvious answer, but anything specific that you lament that did not get made?
Definitely Desolator. That is, I mean, when you hold that thing in your hand and you put them on your shelf next to any number of figures, next to a He-Man or an Alien or a Predator or a Transformer, it's just like the right scale. It's just perfect the way it is. And I think that's the thing I would have loved to, for everyone who wanted one, to be able to have one. So right now I'm the proud owner of a very expensive custom.
Yeah. Well,
I want to make toys that I didn't have on my shelf. I got a toy that's on my shelf now. It, mm-hmm. It cost me a lot, but you know, it's on my shelf now.
And you know what, from a personal standpoint, I want to thank you for allowing me the opportunity to have it in my light box and to photograph it and to handle it. As fragile as it was and everything, but it and loose as it was, I understand it's a prototype. That's the nature of the things. I mean, I've still got some Combiner Wars prototypes here that are loosey goosey, you know, but they're still awesome, you know. And I want to thank you from a personal note for allowing me to have those in my home and to experience those wonderful toys personally. I only wish that the general public would have gotten the opportunity to do that on a larger scale. You know, and it's a shame that Play With This 2's Kickstarters didn't succeed, but at the same time, it's a learning process. Everything we do is a learning process. This podcast, when we first started out, was just Insane Galvatron and I, Greg Metcalf. He and I were sitting down, two guys behind mics, didn't have a flipping clue what we were doing. Started out as a general toy podcast, but we were Transformer fans at our core, and that's what our conversations gravitated to. So Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure was born, and here we are 175 episodes later. I would have, and almost 6 years later, I would have never dreamed that this podcast would have still been going on today. And it's all because you learn from things that you do, things that work, things that don't work. And like with Play With This too, you know, I'm sure you learn what works, what doesn't work, what the fans are willing to put their money out for, what the fans are outspoken about.
Definitely know what doesn't work.
Yeah.
Well, look, every failure is a step closer to success. So I think one day the guys and I and young lady will find the right thing at the right time, and it'll be the right moment, and it'll work. Who knows when that'll be? Maybe a year, maybe 10 years from now, five years. I don't know. But I do this for fun. This isn't something I was going to ever make a living off of or try and turn into a multi-billion-dollar company. And
you were just trying to make something that you enjoy.
I just want to make some cool stuff. That's all I ever tried to do anywhere at Hasbro or here or when I do stuff in my collection room. All I want to do is make some cool stuff.
Absolutely. So closing thoughts, tell us. Okay. Let me put it this way. As we wrap up the show, tell us some things that you wanted to say before, during the Kickstarters, is there anything that you want to tell people that you didn't have the opportunity to tell us before?
Opportunity.
Is there something that you had planned that you didn't have an opportunity that you couldn't reveal to us before?
Oh man. Well, we've got tons of concept art of things that never happened. I mean, we even did, this was before a lot of the guys came on. We did it more as an exercise, not anything that we would ever release, but we had worked on a transforming figure. And again, it was just an exercise. It wasn't anything we were ever going to release or show to people. It was a Skylynx, and it was a space shuttle, and then it had the pterodactyl mode, and then it had a robot mode with the puma head, and then we came up with like a retool of that to make it into Tiger Hawk from Beast Wars, and it was just a really cool concept. It was nothing that it was never going to get made or anything. It was just a really cool thing that we did it very early on just to see if we could do it. So that was really cool. We've never shown that to anyone. We're never going to show that to anyone. It was just an exercise. I think the one thing I want to tell people is that, I'm a fan of toys. I'm a product of the 80s. I'm a human being and I have, flaws just like everybody else. So why can't we just enjoy the fact that we're all into the same stuff? And not,
you know, on that note, I think Paul Eiding, whenever he was a guest on our show here a few weeks ago, I think he said it best. We are all in this together. You know, we're all one big family in a sense, because we are fans of the same things. And why we can't get along and on so many things, it's a mystery to me. I think people will go out there looking for strife and conflict, and that's why we have what we have. But we are all in this together. Why can't we enjoy things together? Support one another. You know,
well, everyone's got one of the things, views, and everyone's entitled to their views, but I don't think we need to necessarily be assholes to each other.
No. I mean, one of the reasons why I gravitated to you and I consider you such a friend now is that I see a lot of your likes and dislikes in myself. It's like, you know, we love these toys and a lot of the same things. And it's that camaraderie that we have is, you know, if we were to go to conventions like BotCon or TFCon, it's why I love going to those conventions, is because I know I can walk up to somebody and start talking to them about some obscure Transformer that was on the shelf in Japan in 1988 that never saw the light of day in the United States. And that person know exactly what I'm talking about and totally enjoy it too. And those are wonderful times, you know, and that's one of the reasons why this podcast exists, is to not only educate people about things like that, but also give people something to listen to that are fans of these toys. Transformers, He-Man, Thundercats, G.I. Joe. You know, we all cross over something. You know, I know Brett, he loves Transformers and he also loves G.I. Joe. I love Transformers. I love He-Man. You know, some people, you know, I would be into Mask, you know, a little bit, even though I didn't collect them as a kid. And another one of my big buttons, Dino Riders. Dino Riders was the last toy line I collected. After Action Master started hitting the shelves, and I'm like, okay, Transformers that don't transform, I'm not on board with that. Ooh, dinosaurs. You know, and I gravitated over to Dino Riders. I had the Torosaurus. I had the Triceratops. I had the Deinonychus. I had all of those. And I never got the T-Rex, and I wanted the T-Rex. And then I'm like, oh, that thing's so damn fragile. But I loved that toy line. You know, and if there was ever a reboot of Dino Riders, count me in. I saw an internet rumor, and take that as it is, an internet rumor that there's going to be a Dino Riders live action movie made, you know, grain of salt.
Everything on the internet is true, man. Come on.
It must be true. But if there truly is a Dino Riders movie coming, I'm going opening night. I don't care if it flipping bombs, it's a Dino Rider movie. But I'm very animated about it because it's something that excites me. What excites you, fans? What excites you, listeners, that are listening to this show right now? You love Transformers. What else do you love? You know, is it so wrong to support people that want to go out and make cool ass toys that we want to collect and put on our shelves? I mean, it's the whole reason that third parties exist. To give us something that the official parties can't or won't give us, you know, be it the design, aesthetic, parts count, what have you, you know, that Predaking that's sitting next to my official Devastator right behind me can't officially happen, but yet I have it on my shelf. I want it on my shelf because it represents a character that I love. And it's something that I love and I want on my shelf. And that's what you were trying to create with Play With This Too. And I hope sees the light of day again.
We'll see. Tomorrow's another day, man. We'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. One final comment from Matthew Ignash. He says, please release the concept art of the other figures. He's begging.
You know, it's over and done with. It's over and done with. Come on. It's over and done with.
But Rick, is there anything else closing that you want to mention before we wrap?
Yes, there is one thing I want to mention. Some people get very upset at some of the things we would have, or some of the names you would have, or some of the features that our figures would have.
Yeah, like this one, you know.
Take it in stride. Some people say you're not professional for doing this stuff. We're making the toys the way we want to make them. Get over it. We're not making them. We obviously aren't making them the way you want to make them. So don't buy into them. We're making it the way we want to make them. So
how's it any different than somebody taking a Armada Unicron or any Transformer with posable fingers and giving them the double bird, you know? They want to do it. And it can do it. Let them do it.
Yeah, we want to make cool stuff that we want on our shelves. So that's where that came from. So
yeah,
get over it.
Get over it.
I'm thank you. Salty. Sorry,
you're salty and peppery. And
I'm having a shirt made that says salty.
And you like to push it. You like to push it real good.
Yeah.
You're salty and you're peppery.
Yeah.
Well, listeners, this has been an open book on Play With This Too. anything that you wanted to know about Play With This 2 and were afraid to ask. Hope a lot of questions were answered with this episode. If there's anything that you want to ask Rick, he actively looks on our Facebook group.
Please don't send letters to my house.
Please don't send letters to his house.
And don't call me on the phone. So, but
or threatening letters.
Facebook is good. Facebook's fine.
Yeah. And if he sees fit to answer your question or can answer your question, I'm sure he will. There's, I'm sure fans have a lot of questions out there for you. And I'm going to hold out hope that one day these great designs will see the light of day. You know, you say they're on the back burner. Me personally, I hope they're not too far on the back burner, but you know, I do see a lot of merit in what you were doing. And I want to thank you as a fan, for those great things. And I am right there with you in lamenting the fact that these Kickstarters failed. The first one had more, but the second one was, like I said, I think was more, the prices were better. And I think you were on the right track with it. It's just a shame that the support wasn't there for it. But it's not all doom and gloom, and that's the best thing to take apart from this. So I want to thank you.
Hey, man, thanks. I want to thank my hot wife and my awesome daughter for making the jack-o'-lantern. It's supposed to be something else. You can see it's better here than on the screen.
It actually looks good from here. So are you going to dress up for Halloween?
Yes, I'm going to be, not Rick Alvarez.
Hmm. You know, I thought about getting a black leather vest and some black, trunks and going as an out of shape Stone Cold Steve Austin. But then I thought, no, it's just cold outside. I don't want to scare people away. So I'm just going to go as little old me. But happy Halloween, everyone. Thank you for listening to episode number 175 of Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure. Tune in next week for another exciting adventure from our show. Michael Swift and cast will be in tow, and hopefully they'll have something else lined up for you other than just sitting and talking. Wait a minute. That's what we do. Never mind. It will be more sitting and talking, but there will be more heads talking, not just two. But hopefully you enjoy this type of interview one-on-one. I think it's more of an intimate type of atmosphere, not in a sexual way, but in a way that is
fireplace here with the jack-o'-lantern.
Yeah, but in a way that is more candid and free flowing. Again, any more questions, feel free to tweet them at us at TFYLP on Twitter. On our Facebook group, we also have Pinterest, Google+, website, tftalk.net. Check us out pretty much anywhere you can find us. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next time on TFYLP.
Hey.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of tftalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@tfylp.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening, and we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.